I'll try to entertain you for the next 10 to 15 minutes on some work we're doing in Kimberly, Idaho, on biochar effects to an eroded calcareous soil. And if you were in the morning session, you heard my one of my co-authors, Rick Lentz, talk about some of the issues we have in southern Idaho. One of the main issues is the fact that over about, I would say maybe 80 or 90 years of furrow irrigation, we have these eroded calcareous soils or subsoils that are exposed. And the fertility status of those subsoils is relatively low compared to the topsoil. And so we took a look at using biochar to hopefully improve the fertility status and overall health of this system. And before I begin, I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, Rick Lentz and Rob Dungan. They're both soil scientists at the Northwest Irrigation Soils Research Laboratory in Kimberly, and Dr. Mary Stromberger, who works out of Colorado State University. And you can see from this first slide, we're doing a number of different things with biochar. We have a field trial that's ongoing. This is part of this ARS initiative. If you're not familiar with that, there's six locations across the U.S. that are basically doing the same thing in terms of biochar application to soils. If you're a little interested in that or a lot interested in that, you can talk to myself or some of the other ARS scientists. We also have been working with, and this is outside of the scope of this project or that I'm going to talk about this afternoon, but we've been working on copper sorption with biochars, and then Rick mainly has been working with biochar application in these long-term pot studies. So with that said, the concept for this project was, can we use a biochar, which we know does a fairly good job of improving soil fertility status of highly eroded soils, can we use this product in essentially highly eroded calcareous systems? And so this is what we did. We did a biochar soil incubation study. We had four treatments with four replicates per treatment. The treatments were 0, 1, 2, and 10% by weight of Sequest biochar. That's Dynamotive biochar. It has a pH of about 7. And we added this with or without manure. The manure application rate was 20 tons per acre on a dry weight basis. This was added to this exposed calcareous subsoil, which has a pH of 8.3. And these pots, which are shown in this picture here, I didn't obviously take a picture of all the pots, but there were quite a few pots. They were watered twice a week to field capacity, and then we destructively sampled those over a year period for a number of constituents. I didn't list all of them here, and in fact, I don't know if I'll be able to talk about all of these today, but pH, nitrate, nitrogen, total carbon and organic carbon, some extractable micronutrients with DTPA extraction. We looked at soil carbon dioxide respiration using a glucose substrate-induced respiration within these little incubation jars. We looked at bacterial populations as well as FAME analysis for shifts or potential shifts in microbial community structure. And I'm just going to get right into it. I have enough time to tell you the story about biochar application alone. We also had biochar plus manure, and the results are very similar to what I'll show you here. So the take-home message is whatever I show you here, you almost see identical results with biochar plus manure. And the theme for these slides is it's pretty straightforward for the next four or five slides that I'll show you. And that is, you'll see biochar application on the x-axis. So we have 0, 1, 2, and 10% by weight. And then the constituent that we're studying on the y-axis, in this case, pH. The bars, well, this is really difficult to see. It's easier to see on the screen here, unfortunately. But the bars basically represent the different time periods. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 4, 6, and 12 months. You'll see a bunch of statistics. I like throwing everything up here when I give presentations, even though maybe the take-home message isn't to look at the overall statistics. But nonetheless, like the interaction, I've been told in statistics when you have an interaction, you're supposed to separate the main effects, but I'm going to do that today because it's interesting to me. So this probably won't be published in this format, but nonetheless, that's how I'm going to present it today. So, for example, above the set of bars, we see differences in lowercase letters that indicates basically that as we increase biochar application rate, we see a slight increase in pH, which is relatively interesting because the pH of the biochar was measured at 7 and the soil pH was 8.3. So the increase in pH is kind of unexpected and not easily explainable. If we look at change in pH over time within this box up here, we see the differences represented by different letters. The pH kind of bounces around. It's not greatly different over time periods, but it does bounce around from month to month. Again, it's not very interesting, I don't think, because the pH hasn't changed very much, but nonetheless, it does change slightly. If we look at nitrate nitrogen, now the graphs start looking a little more interesting. And if we apply essentially greater and greater biochar application rates, we see a substantial decrease in nitrate nitrogen. We think this is due to immobilization, although if you've been in the session, there's been other suppositions as to what's going on with nitrate nitrogen. It could be entrapment or entrainment within particles. We think it's immobilization. I'm not showing you the data on this slide, but the organic carbon to organic nitrogen ratios in the system actually increase, and they go essentially about 17 to 1, to 22 to 1, to 33 to 1, to over 70 to 1. And so to me, that is indicative of immobilization occurring in the system. Real interesting, you see a rebound, and I'm not going to go through the table up here in the top right, but it's pretty obvious over time we see a release in nitrate nitrogen in these systems. So it's a short-term effect that that we're observing. Now, let's take a look briefly at some micronutrients. This is a slide of DTPA extractable iron. And in our systems, if you know a little bit about basic soil chemistry, increased pH, you tend to see decreases in micronutrient availability. It's a general rule of thumb. In our systems, we tend to see deficiencies in iron in some plant species. And so this is telling us that we do see somewhat of a response at 2% by weight of biochar, a pretty good response in terms of extractable iron at 10% by weight. And then we see these nice decreases over time, which is basically telling you that, or we think this is telling you that you add a micronutrient source into biochar, and over time it's just becoming a more recalcitrant phase. It's precipitating as an insoluble mineral precipitate. If we look at manganese, the trend is similar. We see a response in manganese with the greatest biochar application rate, and then downward over time. And essentially the same kind of response with nickel. These soils here in southern Idaho, if you were looking at nickel availability in terms of plant growth, these could be considered borderline nickel deficient. And so we do see somewhat of a response with biochar application, again, decrease over time as nickel becomes more insoluble. And for zinc and copper, we saw no effect. If we look at respired CO2, we see somewhat of a response as you increase biochar application rate. We see a little bit more CO2 respired. Over time, this is real interesting. If I'm going to look at this box up here, it's a little easier to explain because the data below is rather noisy. But at month one, we're very low in terms of CO2 response. And then we see this lag phase. At month two, the lag phase is over. And we get a nice plume in CO2. And then it decreases over time. It's probably pretty typical for adding a material like this to a soil. If we look at the organic carbon, this is pretty straightforward. We added more and more organic carbon, and we see an increase in organic carbon over time. The interesting thing is that even though we do this, over time, the data is a little bit noisy, but it doesn't seem to have much of an effect in terms of decreasing organic carbon content in the system, meaning month one is very similar to month six or month 12. So in the short term, we're seeing an increase in carbon content in this system that seems to be maintained. We also did some bacterial population work, and we note that if you add any biochar, you see an increase in bacterial populations. Over time, this sort of matches up somewhat with our CO2 response curve. We have somewhat of a lag phase in month one, two, and then boom, we get an increase in bacterial populations, and then they decrease over time. We also we're in the process of processing this data. This is the FAME analysis data. And this is essentially hot off the presses as of a week or two ago. And what this data is telling you is that the PC1 axis can account for 66% of the variability in this data set. So meaning the biochar is accounting for 66% of the variability in the microbial populations or changes in microbial populations. And if you look at the data, we see that there's a really good separation between the 10% by weight biochar versus the other application rates. essentially no difference in low applications, if you want to call them low, 1% to 2% by weight, just could be high, relatively speaking. But there's definitely a difference as we go to the 10%. So we're seeing some sort of shift in the microbial population, and we're still analyzing that data currently. So in conclusion, the question we asked was, can we use biochar to improve an eroded calcareous soil? And I would say, in the short term, yes. We saw improvements in, at least in the short term, micronutrient availability. We saw some short-term decreases in nitrate nitrogen, which could be detrimental if you're trying to grow a crop, but we did see a rebound. I would say that at 2% or less is probably a feasible application rate in these types of systems. The organic carbon content in our systems actually was increased with biochar application, and it maintained that level at least up to a year. And that's a good thing in eroded calcareous soils where the organic carbon content is 1% or less. And I would say that in at least a calcareous system, a 10% application rate is just very excessive. And with that, I'm right on time. Cool. Thank you.
No, y'all get to ask him a question. We do have time for a question or two.
Brad.
If you had just a compost area in your well compost area in your how would it affect that? Especially on the CO2 regulation.
Yeah, so the question was, if we had a composted dairy manure and we applied biochar to it, how would the CO2 evolution be different? I don't know. I would think that composted manure would still see some CO2 evolution, maybe a little bit greater than what we saw with the biochar application. I can tell you this, when we added biochar plus manure, not composted manure, the CO2 evolution was greater. By maybe about double in some instances. So I would suspect that you would see an increase as well.
Anybody else?
Jim, do you have the explanation of the things that one of the figures you saw? The soil organic carbon kind of decreased for a few months and then bounced back up. Do you have any explanation for that?
No. I'm still wrestling with what was going on in that system. Yeah, it bounced back, it bounced down, and then it bounced back up. And you look at the data set, and there's a little bit of noise, but when you run the statistics, you know, Tukey's, there's differences, so it's unexplainable at least at this point. Maybe somebody else has an explanation. Dan probably does.
I was going to ask you. I might have missed it, but do you measure a surface area for these biochars?
On this particular biochar, the surface area was measured. It was Dynamotive and one. The surface area of one, Kurt's telling me.
1 meter square per gram.
Yeah.
Is that high or low?
It's
In terms of the biochar,
it's low.
Very low.
Yeah, it's really low.
Okay.